What's going on, y'all? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, COVID-free Cam. And as always, mi amigo, Philo Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio, ready to rock and roll. A little bit tired. I got woken up this morning earlier than normal.
What happened?
My next door neighbor's an elderly couple.
Yeah. Oh, and no.
My wife woke me up about 6:30 and said, hey, they need your help. The guy's name is like JD. And he's an old fella.
Did he fall?
Yeah, he fell down and couldn't get up. And he's been laying in the floor for 3 hours. And the neighbor finally just didn't want to wake us up. Finally,
and you're like, just come get me.
Woke Dali up and Dali came and get me. She's like, yeah, you're going to have to go over there and help him. So I'm like, all right. Oh, crap. You know, so I get over there and I'm expecting him to be really hurt. No, he's got like a pillow propped up. He's like watching TV. He's like, I fell 3 hours ago, but I just can't stand up. He's like probably 80.
Did you tell him just to come, anytime this happens, come wake me up at any time? Like, yeah. It's not a big deal.
I was like, next time you don't have to wait 3 hours. He's like, well, I didn't want to wake y'all up, so I figured I'd wait. And then after a while, I got to get up because I got to go to the bathroom.
So he's just propped up waiting.
Yeah, it took 10 seconds. I picked him up and he's like, oh man, thanks.
And, got him over to the
couch. That was it. Like,
relax, bro, relax.
And I told him I was used to it because my father falls down a lot, the human cockroach.
That's right.
But so we have to pick him up because, you know, half of him is paralyzed, so he can't really pick his leg up. But yeah, so
one day that'll be us.
Probably.
Yeah, if we live long enough.
I survived coronavirus already. I mean, look, my father's the human cockroach, so I got some of that DNA. I mean, I don't last as long as him, but it's hard to keep me down, right? Right. Yeah, poor fella. So I'm a little bit tired. And also, we went for a big hike up on Johnson's Peak yesterday.
How did that go?
It went great. It was beautiful weather.
A little windy.
A little windy. But
it was nice out there.
It was perfect. Awesome. Yes, I had a good time. So
did the boys go crazy?
Yeah, they liked it. Little Luke, he likes it. I gave him my trekking poles.
And he was just rocking and rolling?
Yeah, you know when you got kids and you got to want them to do something, you can, if they don't really want to do it, there's always a way around it. You can get them like a uniform or some kind of gadget. Once they have that, they're totally game in.
Hey, I fall for it all the time, too.
Oh, I do, too. I love gadgets. I think that's a guy thing, right?
It's this guy's thing. I love knickknacks and gadgets.
I have so many gadgets I've purchased over the years that I've probably used once or twice in my entire life. But, I mean, I was geeked up when I ordered it.
Yeah. You know,
you're like, woo, baby. The kids today don't understand. Like, when we were young, like, you'd have to cut it out of a magazine. I remember like the Century or Black Belt magazine.
Yep.
You'd want some kind of shuriken or sai or something crazy.
Those ninja boots.
Yeah. And you would order and you'd have to mail it off and it might be 6 or 8 weeks.
Did you ever do it and like forget you had done it?
Oh yeah.
And then it comes in and you're very like, rarely, oh man, it's like Christmas in the summer. Yeah. And you go crazy.
Nowadays, I mean, you order something, it can be at your doorstep 6 hours later.
Before you put your phone down, you can hear somebody knocking. Like, hey, I got your stuff out here.
Right.
We went to town today. My wife and I drove into town today and drove past a house. There was an Amazon van in front of the house, mm-hmm. and somebody was outside mowing. And the first thing my wife goes, well, I don't know how you get that service, but I need to hire that.
Right. You deliver groceries.
Yeah. Like, I didn't know Amazon had a mow service.
Yeah. Man, I've been disappointed in the movies that have been coming out lately. I mean, I know like when the lockdown first happened, I was excited because the new Trolls and a whole bunch of movies kind of came out really early. Man, there has not been very many bangers out lately.
I'm waiting for one movie in particular, and it was supposed to be out in April. And when all this hit, they put it on hold till this gets lifted and comes out. And it's called Antlers.
Antlers?
Antlers, yeah.
What is that about? Guy walking around the hills looking for sheds?
I mean, a little boy that tells the story. It's based on like a short story of this whole thing. I just want everybody listening that hasn't seen it, go on YouTube, search up Antlers trailer and watch it. I'm going to just tell you this, roughly based on a Wendigo. That's what the whole thing's about. So I'll show you the trailer when we get off air.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I start telling you about it, I've read the short story, so I don't want to give away too much of the whole thing. But just trust me when I tell you, it looks really creepy and very, very interesting.
Right.
And I got something else that's really creepy and very, very interesting. Folks, we're going to jump right into this. Listen to this account. Our homie Lon hooked us up with this, and I want y'all to hear this, and he's posted it up too. Y'all can go find it, about a werewolf that haunted a family for over a decade. Now, if you remember, I talked about the story of the lady that I know that said her mother had always seen this dark figure. Remember mm-hmm. that it stayed and haunted them. This took place in Hillsborough County, Florida. It says this incident occurred during the winter of 1991 in Hillsborough County, Florida. My mother, one of my cousins and I, we're coming back from a school concert. Now, at the time, we lived in a rural part of the country or the county. We were 3 miles from our home when my mother hit the brakes real hard. I was in the back seat sleeping, and my cousin was sleeping in the front passenger side. I heard a hard thump, and then my mom hit the gas. And I asked what happened. She screamed out, "I just hit a werewolf." Now, my cousin's eyes were wide open, and she wouldn't talk at all. My mother told me more of the details when we got home. Before she hit it, she noticed a car on the side of the road up ahead. When she came up to it, the creature jumped right in front of our car. Now, she was going about 45 miles an hour when she hit the brakes. It landed on the hood of the car. Its face landed on the windshield. It had black fur and red eyes, a long mouth open to reveal a large set of teeth. Definitely not a guy in a suit. It pushed itself off the car, leaving claw marks. My mother told me that the last time there was one in the area was over 20 years ago.
So her mother knew about a previous werewolf lurking in that area.
Or dog man, something along those lines, yeah.
Man, that is so... I like the idea of that, kind of like in what the movie The Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Where remember the old grandpas, like there's one thing bad about this town, whatever fictional town it was in, I think it was like all the... Damn vampires, remember?
Yeah, in The Lost Boys, yeah. What was the name of that? Santa Cruz, California.
Was it San? Okay, well, definitely that's a real place. I've been there.
Because he sits down, remember, and he's like, if there's one thing about this place, it's all the
just nonchalantly,
vampires.
Like everybody kind of knows there's a werewolf lurking in those woods. Not a big deal.
You're like, it is.
I mean, like, how do you just glaze over that? Like, Mom, you never, like, told me about that?
Well, like you and I have talked about Mokele and Mbembe. They treat it like it's nothing. You're like, it's out there. There's a big dinosaur. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
One of the coolest parts, back to the Lost Boys real quick, is that sax player on the boardwalk. When I went to Santa Cruz like two years ago, man, I was like, I was telling my wife all about that scene. She had no idea what I was talking about. She's like, I've seen that movie. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, that dude's great. I think he passed away a couple years. Didn't we? We've talked about this. I've looked him up. We've discussed him. I think we're obsessed with that
guy. Back to the story.
Well, it goes on to say that I believe it was back in 2001, I worked maintenance at a factory, again, there in Hillsborough County. Between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. was my shift.
This is the same person?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And for about a week, I heard weird sounds coming from the back of the building, which was thick brush, and not the typical animal sounds. One night, I heard a loud crash coming from the side entrance. I investigated to find a large garbage can was thrown on top of the roof, and then it rolled off. Now, of course, I was thinking kids until I got a strong whiff of something nasty. And that wasn't the trash. Then I was thinking skunk ape. I quickly picked up all the trash and went back into the building. The next night, I was traveling between the two buildings when the thick bushes started shaking. And I heard an animal make a horrible sound like it was being choked. I ran into the lighted parking lot and turned around. I saw a large humanoid shape appear out of the brush. And then it went back in. Now, a couple nights later, my mother was waiting to pick me up when she saw a large shape come in under the light by the side entrance. It suddenly noticed her and went back into the shadows. A week passed without incident. And again, my mother was waiting to pick me up when she heard a couple of dogs barking close by. She turned to see a large hooded man walking behind the car. She was across the parking lot on the side of the road. Now, get a load of this. It says, the dogs belong to a couple of trailer folks nearby. These dogs travel in a pack of 4 or 5 and weigh between 60 and 90 pounds. They were running around the man, barking and snapping at him. And one of the large dogs got a hold of his arm. Then my mother saw the man's face. It wasn't a man under that hood. A head of a black wolf became visible. The unearthly being shook and then threw the dog like a doll. The rest of the dogs ran for their lives. The hooded creature walked into the nearby woods. The next night was a full moon, and I heard its unearthly howl. We never heard or saw it again. Now a housing project occupies the land where it once lived.
Okay. First off.
Here we go.
No, I'm not saying I don't believe the story. I'm saying for me personally. If I was in an area and I grew up and my mom hit a werewolf with the car, then told me that she knew about werewolves living in that town, First thing I would do is move. That's the first thing. Second, if I didn't move, I would immediately go out and purchase silver bullets. I would carry a pistol on me at all times. I would not go out on a full moon. I'd have Wolf's Bane draped about me like two chains or Trick Daddy around my neck at all times.
Let's go.
And if I heard anything in the woods, I would not to think anything other than it would probably be a werewolf. You wouldn't just forget.
Yeah.
I believe there's what they saw. I'm saying that's terrifying.
What I'm saying is I wouldn't have picked up that trash. I'd have looked out there and been like, not my problem. I'm going back in. I did not see that.
When it's daytime. I like the idea of the traveling trailer folk with dogs and this werewolf. It's like they're gypsies. I don't know why when I think of gypsies, I think of like those traveling ones from the old werewolf movies, you know, where they got the pentagram in his hand and she's reading his.
Well, I think of the movie Thinner. But with all of them is like a, and how great would that be a movie? Is it's like a group of like, instead of saying like a gypsy or travelers, what about like a sideshow group or a circus group like you and I talked about? But for the majority of it, they're all werewolves or they're all some sort of shapeshifter. That would be a crazy story.
And you know why that works out so well in your mind is because once again, the werewolves are for whatever reason portrayed as like scumbags or dirty people. I don't
get it.
Where vampires are like elegant.
Yeah.
I just watched Interview with the Vampire the other day. I hadn't seen that movie in years. I forgot how good it was.
That is a wonderful film.
I forgot Antonio Banderas was in it.
Very, very young Antonio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I still, hands down, one of my favorite vampire movies, 30 Days of Night.
The concept is awesome.
It's so great. Yeah.
Speaking of werewolves, there's an area that's quite famous for werewolves, and that's Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Southeast Wisconsin, especially Bray Road. Remember Melinda Godfrey?
Yeah.
And her books and stuff. Well, check this out. This happened a couple years ago, and the person says they saw a devil dog near Bray Road there in Southeast Wisconsin.
Your mother used to have one of those.
Yeah, yeah. Back in 2012, it says, my friends and I used to meet up every night to go cruise around. We all lived with our parents, so we didn't have much of an option. We worked in retail, so we'd all usually be off around 10 p.m., would meet up around 11 p.m. and go for an evening drive. Well, one night, it was the usual, two friends came and picked me up in my buddy's green van, and we drove a little out of town to a popular county road cruise spot. It was unusually foggy this night. I believe it was late spring. As we were riding around, something crazy and unexplained happened. My friend was driving, and out of the fog, we saw something. It was a dog, but not like one I've ever saw before. It had long, gnarled black hair that formed into mangled dreadlocks that went down to the ground. It had a long and big sharp teeth, bigger than I've ever seen on a dog before. And it had beady, piercing red eyes. My friend, who was driving, saw it as soon as I did and yelled, holy crap, and slammed the brakes. When he hit the thing, it disappeared into thin air. We got out of the car immediately and looked around. There was nothing, no evidence of anything, no fur, no blood. It didn't even feel like we hit anything, but we did. At this point, we hadn't discussed what we had seen. So I asked my friend, and he gave the exact same description as I did. The guy in the back seat didn't see anything and was really confused. We called it an early night. We didn't talk or say much the rest of the way home, but we still talk about it to this day. I know that we both saw the exact same thing. Some have doubted my story over the years and said we were all high. But this was a shared experience. We both saw the same thing. To this day, I'm legitimately curious as to what it was. Some have told me it's a devil dog, which is an old Irish legend. What makes this very strange is there's a barn less than a half mile from our siding in which two sisters committed suicide. This is also about a half hour away from Bray Road, the local werewolf legend. Thanks for everything you do, SF. So that's crazy, right? They don't even know if it was a physical thing. Like they saw it, but when they hit it, they said it was gone. So maybe it was like a spectral devil dog. And maybe this same devil dog or this spectral being is what's, you know, being sighted there on Bray Road or was sighted.
Yeah.
So maybe there never physically was a werewolf on Bray Road. Maybe it was this spectral devil dog.
Or maybe there's both.
Or maybe both. Or the opposite. Maybe that's the werewolf that's been seen over there by Bray Road. I don't know.
That is crazy.
Creepy
that's
story.
Still something that I don't want to see. I don't want to see any kind of devil, dog, werewolf, dog man. I don't want to see any of that.
Like, all jokes aside, if you did have a relative that told you about a werewolf or you heard about it in this area, say, oh, yeah, out there by Peaster.
Yeah.
There's been over sightings. Wouldn't you at least have one mag filled with silver bullets just in case?
I would, yeah, 100%. Right? I would have more than one mag. I'd have multiple magazines filled with multiple weapons for it.
I'll never forget when I was a little kid, one of my uncles was hunting with like a 30-30 Winchester or something, and he had these bullets, and I don't know what they, you know, they changed the tips on them.
Yeah.
Like the colors of the ballistic tips, like one year they're red, one year they might be green. I remember he had these bullets, and for whatever reason, it had silver was what the ballistic tips color were, and he told me they were silver bullets, and like I was like eight, so I believed it. I was like,
you was going with it, wasn't you?
I was like, oh, and of course he made up a story. Like, oh yeah, I had these specially made.
Yeah.
I know a gunsmith, he makes them just in case a werewolf is seen.
I used to hear stories, and I've never looked into it now that I've gotten older, but I used to hear the stories that the way, you know how you load a 30-30, the way they stack, you know, end to end to end, instead of it being in a magazine or a box.
Like a tube. It's like a tube underneath the barrel, right?
Because of the recoil of those 30-30s, that because of the way that bullet touches the primer, that there was a chance that one bullet could set the primer off on another bullet and create a chain reaction in the tube of your firearm.
I know that
because of how you stack them.
The tip on those 30-30 rounds is always like snub-nosed. Right.
Well, that's why. Is if it's, I never thought about that at the because point. It hits and you could, but I've, and I don't know if it was because that had happened, because every round I've ever had for 30-30s have always been like a bull nosed.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And I don't ever know if it's because of that reason or, you know, I never looked into it. I just, one of those things you grow up with it, you're just like, I assume that's why it is. And I'm not looking into
it. I never knew that.
You don't want that to go down.
I never knew that till you just now told me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, because I can still see the image in my mind.
But, you know, I mean, they don't have a lot of recoil, but, I mean, you can imagine if you, imagine setting one off.
Makes sense.
Well, that would be a train wreck, wouldn't it, that the whole tube, your whole tubular magazine goes off at one time? Ooh, no thanks. And speaking of no thanks, TR sends this in right here, because it has to do with some kayaking. Happened back on the 6th of this month. Just a few days ago.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
It says, so this all just happened less than an hour ago and I'm still freaking out, but here goes nothing. Me and this friend of mine, Mel, not of course his real name, usually spend our nights together around a campfire or out in the woods doing various things. Tonight, we decided to go fishing out of kayaks on the river here in West Michigan. After we got on the water, it was rather peaceful and we could hear foxes and fish were coming up right to the boat. Now, we were just shooting the crap for maybe 20 minutes before we hit this bend. Now, Mel had brought a friend we call Colin. Colin was ahead of us and said he could hear singing. Now, we all stopped our kayaks and listened. In silence for about 30 seconds. Then, all of a sudden, we hear this scream. It started high-pitched, almost like a bell, and would end in these screams of torture. We hurried our way back to shore. Of course, it didn't take us too long. Now, this is the part that still has me a little anxiety-filled. While we were loading up the kayaks into Mel's truck, we could still hear this screaming, and I felt like it kept getting closer. And by the time everything was packed up, I heard it again, except this time sounding no more than a quarter mile up the road. Now, Mel and I hopped into his truck, Colin into his, and of course we headed home. As we were about to pull off this dirt road onto the main road, I saw on the side of this road this humanoid creature hunched over, thin, long gray hair covering its face almost down to its knees, and it walked with a strong, and I mean strong, limp. I freaked out and told Mel. He hadn't seen anything, but he felt like all of his energy had just left his body, and he almost blew through the stop sign that we were passing. Now, I told my fiancé 2 days ago, and I felt like I was going to see a creature I couldn't comprehend. And I feel it happened tonight. I'm definitely not sleeping tonight, and I'd like to get to the bottom of what I saw. TR. So a limping, it almost again sounds, it doesn't go in, TR doesn't go in deeply into the description, but it almost sounds rake-like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like for some reason, anytime I think of like a pale-skinned, long-haired, kind of hunched humanoid, it just feels more rakish than any of these other descriptions.
Right. And you know, there's a lot of people, whenever we do sightings like this, they'll email the show and tell us, you know, the rake was created like on creepypasta.
Yeah.
We understand that, but the people are still, and have been seeing strange looking creatures like that. like emaciated,
yep,
bald, long, thin. This has been going on a long time. I mean, so sometime later, somebody created a story, called it the rake, but yeah, that's, we're using that term because what else, we don't know what else to call it. Also, lots of times we'll call it like a golem,
yep,
like creature, but it's all the same thing. And I'm glad you brought that up because I've got a possible sighting of a rake like creature Virginia.
Oh no.
Check this out. It says, I work as a paramedic in a rural area of Virginia. This entails a lot of backwoods, mountain roads late at night. Now, this encounter happened in the summer of 2016. One night around 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., I was driving back from a call. I was traveling up a road I've been up many times before. My partner and I were just listening to music and making the best of being at work. As I rounded an upwards slanted curve, the headlight of my unit hit something that still gives me chills to this day. This creature was almost in a position that reminded me of a catcher in baseball, as if it was squatting beside the road, maybe 10 feet in a small grassy patch. It was so pale and white. I distinctly remember its arms and legs being so long, just unnaturally long and slender. Its fingers were the same. If I had to estimate its height, I would say it was easily 6 feet tall. Its head was facing away from me. I honestly did not get a good look at the face, so I couldn't notice any facial features. I literally was in shock. I didn't speak a word. I turned to my partner, who was in the passenger seat, and the look on his face told me I was not seeing an imaginary thing. I said to him, "Please tell me you saw that." He did, with a number of colorful words. It may have been 50 yards away when we agreed to turn around and look again. When we got back to the same place, of course, there was nothing. I honestly didn't have the courage to get out of the ambulance to check. My partner did pull out a spotlight we have in our units to check the woods, and again, nothing. I can't stress enough how pale, bony, and slender this creature was. It was like the pale male from Pan's Labyrinth, but I could see every bone in its body. I only got a 2 or 3 second look at the creature. Thanks, KK. Not your KK, but right, man, see, it's the same kind of thing.
Same
though.
Thing. Yep, same thing.
And once again, not just one person saw it. They both saw it. Both people, both EMTs or whatever, saw it. So, you could easily say, man, I was imagining something. But when two people see it, how do you explain that?
Well, and I think back too, like you talked about, the same as, like you brought up Slender Man, you bring up all these things, is we say they're created online. Are they created online, or is it collectively like a djinn, like we bring it to, or I'm sorry, a tulpa, we bring it to life?
Yeah, I often wonder that.
You always think of how far are we taking this whenever we start dumping all this attention on it.
Right, or the person that created that.
Yeah.
Did they see something that inspired their creation and then naming it the rake? Did somebody have a vision, or were they visited by a shadow figure and then created creepy Slender Man?
Yeah.
Did the writer of the movie Predator have a Glimmer Man sighting or heard of one, and that's what inspired him to create the movie Predator?
Yeah.
I don't know. But these stories go back in lots of cultures in different parts of the world. Very, very creepy. And once again, it was EMT. So once it seems like it's more credible because these people are trained observers. They're able to handle trauma.
Yeah.
Patients that same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some other type of professionals, those in law enforcement and their encounters with UFOs. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Here at Expanded Perspectives, we often discuss sightings of the unusual, the strange, the unbelievable. From upright walking canines
to flying dinosaurs, to visitors from another galaxy, or even another dimension. We discuss stories from all over the world, both ancient and stories just emailed to us last week. People, young, old, male, female, doesn't seem to matter. The paranormal occurs to all walks of life. We often cover sightings from credible witnesses, like those that are trained observers, like pilots, doctors, scientists, and of course, the men and women in law enforcement. Those people who serve and protect the public tend to be some of the most credible witnesses and investigators when it comes to bringing forth the truth. When public servants see UFOs and are willing to stand up and testify about those sightings, their words are no less credible. In fact, with so many questions surrounding UFOs, there is great controversy that puts these respected men and women's reputations, families, and careers on the line with each and every report. Still, in the name of truth, they step forward. That is why, for me personally, I find these stories the most impactful. The fact that even mentioning the sighting of a UFO while on duty could mean immediate retirement shows what they are risking by even coming forward. Yet, countless people over the years in law enforcement swear what they saw was very real. On today's show, I'm going to be discussing some of the most popular sightings by police officers while on duty. Let's begin. First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you for your service to the men and women of law enforcement out there listening. I know we have a lot of them out there, but so thank you. Some of these stories are from a while ago, like, you know, back in the 60s, and some of them are more current. But I'm going to be talking about some of the most popular. Let's start with a Mr. Lonnie Zamora. In the late afternoon on Friday, April 24th, 1964, Socorro Police Sergeant Lonnie Zamora departed his cruiser on a rough and rocky dirt road to investigate an unidentified flying object which came to rest in an arroyo south of Socorro. The desolate, undeveloped area was primarily made up of mesquite and creosote bushes. What Sergeant Zamora witnessed at approximately 5:45 p.m. was an egg-shaped craft traveling into Socorro from the south. It was later reported and documented as having been witnessed in flight by five tourists traveling through Socorro. Zamora, in an interview following the incident, stated that he witnessed a bluish flame and a loud roar coming from the direction of the arroyo. Zamora approached the area where he believed the craft had landed. Zamora later stated that he had first seen the object from about 150 yards and believed it to be a car or some sort of vehicle in need of assistance. Zamora then radioed the sheriff's office about a possible accident he would be investigating. Zamora then contacted New Mexico State Police Sergeant Samuel Chavez, someone who Zamora trusted to assist in the investigation. After requesting the assistance of New Mexico State Police Sergeant Chavez, Zamora once again began approaching the object. As Zamora approached, he could see that rather than an overturned vehicle, the object seemed to be a whitish zero or O or egg-shaped vehicle with no discernible windows or doors and a shiny sheen to it like aluminum, as well as what looked like a set of four thin legs underneath it, propping it up. And the figures standing nearby were about the size of very small adults with somewhat large heads and wearing what looked like coveralls and possibly some sort of headgear. Now, even at this point, he wasn't struck by anything particularly outlandish, although it was starting to give him the odd feeling that something was off. The object had some sort of red insignia on it, although he could not tell exactly what it depicted or what it meant. And he says that one of the figures seemed to jump in surprise when it realized that he was approaching, after which both of them seemed to disappear within the object. In the meantime, Zamora had radioed in the incident, and it was then that he would be truly shocked when the object in question began to lift up straight into the air. He later stated, "I had hardly turned around from the car when I heard a roar. It was not exactly a blast, but a very loud roar. At that close, it was really loud. Not like a jet. No, you know, not like a jet sounds. It started low in frequency, quickly. Then the roar rose in frequency to a higher tone and in loudness. From loud to very loud. At the same time as I heard the roar, I saw the flame. The flame was under the object. The object was starting to go straight up, slowly up. The object slowly rose straight up. The flame that I witnessed, was a light blue and was at the bottom. And towards the center of this circle, it was sort of turning orange. Now, from this angle, I saw the side of the object, not the end first. It was difficult to describe the flame. I thought from the roar that it might blow up or something. It came from the underside of the object, towards the middle, possibly 4 feet in area. That was just a rough guess. I cannot describe the flame any further except that it was blue and kind of orange. There was no smoke, except that the dust that it had kicked up in the immediate area. Afterwards, it fell off. My glasses fell off. And I kept running north towards the car. And this thing was between me and the car. I first passed underneath it. I glanced back a couple of times, and I just saw it rising up into the sky. I was just hovering for a moment, about 20 to 25 feet. It took about less than 6 seconds when the object started to rise, and when I glanced back this time, it was about 50 feet. I saw the thing keep going up, and I kept heading back towards my car. At this time, the roar was going away. I saw the object moving away from me. It did not come any closer to me. It appeared to go in a straight line at the same height, possibly 50 feet from the ground. It kept moving across the country till I lost sight of it. He would later claim that after this spectacular takeoff, the craft ceased to make any noise, he didn't notice any more flames, and proceeded to silently shoot off in the distance over a mountain. As he stood there in shock and awe at what he had just witnessed, his backup finally arrived, in the form of his friend, Sergeant Chavez. Now Zamora excitedly told Chavez what had just happened, and the two searched the area to allegedly find strange indentations and scorched marks on the earth. The other officers, who would arrive later, claimed that some of the vegetation on the ground was still hot to the touch, and some of them even described it as still smoldering, as if it had just been hit by massive heat or lightning. Soon, word got out about his strange experience, and local reporters began asking questions. Investigators would intensively question Zamora about the incident and deemed him to be a reliable witness, a respected police officer who seemed to be telling the truth and had no reason to lie. Although, there were a few other local witnesses that claimed that they saw something very strange on that same day. It turned out that several independent witnesses had also reported seeing an egg-shaped, unidentified object trailing with a bluish flame at approximately the same time as Zamora's counter, thus backing up his claims. One witness in particular gave a dramatic report of some sort of silvery craft emerging from a bank of black smoke, of which he said, "A round, saucer, or egg-shaped object descended vertically from the black smoke that I saw, and after climbing vertically out of the smoke, the object leveled off and moved in a southwest direction." He wasn't the only one. There were other witnesses as well, including those who had seen the object visually and those who had heard a strange roar echo out across the desolate landscape, as well as those who had seen merely a bright flash from the region. Now, some 56 years later, Zamora's encounter seems to be genuine. I, for one, absolutely believe him. Let's move on. This next one is Mr. Herbert Schirmer. Now, Mr. Schirmer was a young patrolman who took a drag from his cigarette, trying in vain to steady his nerves. Sitting in a small police station, mostly empty in the early morning hours, 22-year-old Herbert Schirmer felt feverish and disoriented. As he later recounted, his body felt completely drained.
His head buzzed and his thoughts raced. All he kept saying to himself was, "Did this really happen to me?" As an officer with the Ashland Police Department, Schirmer said he had been trained to make notes of incidents in his log, whatever they might be. So there, in the early morning quiet, he grabbed a pen and scrawled a short message in his notebook summarizing the night's bizarre events. His note said that at 2:30 a.m., December 3, 1967, I saw a UFO at the junction of U.S. Highway 6 and Nebraska Highway 63, believe it or not. Now, Schirmer's gripping story of an alleged alien encounter would ignite a firestorm of news coverage. Schirmer would become a legend among UFO enthusiasts, and his tale of the spacecraft and its inhabitants would become ingrained in American folklore for decades. Schirmer was a Nebraska native. He joined the Navy when he was 17, and he served in the Vietnam War, although he didn't support the war. When he returned home, he sought a career in law enforcement, and because of his background, was soon hired by the Ashland Police Department. As previously stated, at 2:30 a.m. on December 3, 1967, after checking on two gas stations in the area, Schirmer was driving his police cruiser along U.S. Highway 6 toward Nebraska 63. As he approached the intersection, he noticed a strange-looking object with lights that appeared to be a truck hovering partly over Highway 63 and partly above the shoulder. The World Herald newspaper reported on December 5th that Schirmer drove towards the object, stopping about 40 feet away. Illuminated by the high beams of his cruiser, Schirmer could see the object was sleek and metallic. He later stated that it was very shiny, like if you polished the bumper on your car. It was an oblong disc, he claims, about 20 feet wide and 15 feet tall. Schirmer later told the newspaper, through exterior portholes, the patrolman could see red lights flashing inside of the craft. He later said in an interview that the football-shaped spacecraft began to rise until it was about 50 feet off of the ground. It then began to emit a loud beep, which became faster, louder, and shriller. Suddenly, Schirmer said, the spacecraft shot an orange, red beam towards the ground and quickly vanished. Schirmer's initial account of the encounter ends there, with the officer approaching the craft only to see it rise and disappear. When he returned to the station, he later said the clock read 3 a.m., and Schirmer felt as if he had lost about 20 minutes between the moment he first saw the spacecraft and the time he arrived at the station. Schirmer made the note in his log and began to tell his fellow officers what he had seen. As the story spread, he volunteered to take a lie detector test, which he eventually passed, as Ashland Police Chief William Welshlin reported to the World Herald at the time. Even so, once the press got wind of the story, the ridicule began. Schirmer said he'd answer the phone and it would be prank callers. One would be claiming to be calling from Mars. Once an owner of a local tire shop flagged him down, he said in public to say, "Hey Herb, if you ever see another flying saucer and it lands, you tell them, the aliens, I want to sell them a set of tires." Now, though the Ashland residents also reported seeing lights in the sky on December 3rd, the story had its share of skeptics. At least one local historian, who lived near the site of the alleged counter, a Miss Donald Graham, as the World Herald referred to her at the time, said the lights Schirmer saw were likely caused by some sort of natural phenomenon. Springs in the low meadow near the intersection had been known to produce fog, Graham told the newspaper. The headlights of passing trucks, shining into the layers of fog, would sometimes create an illusion of round platters of light that moved and dipped with the trucks traveling along the highway. The area had a history of strange sightings. And she even claimed that one Native American legend held that it was plagued by spirits, that area. But the skeptics didn't deter Schirmer, who stuck to his story. In fact, he had much more to say. Months later, in early 1968, the young officer began interviewing with the Condon Committee, a University of Colorado project funded by the U.S. Air Force that studied reports of UFO encounters. I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Condon Report. In a 4-hour session, Schirmer was hypnotized and asked about his sighting. Under hypnosis, he told a much longer story. He had not just seen the spacecraft, but he actually met with the beings inside it. See, he didn't recall this until he was hypnotized. Chief Washlin, who accompanied Shermer to the session, took notes that he later provided to the World Herald, and in that report he said Herb stated that the alien form was white and fuzzy, but he stated that it was shaped like a man. This subject was not hostile, and they stated that they meant no harm. Now, in a recorded interview from the UFO conference, Shermer said the humanoid exited the spacecraft and approached him while he was still in his police cruiser. It prodded the policeman with some kind of instrument and then spoke. He said that the alien asked him, "Are you the watchman of this town?" His response was, "Yes, sir." And then he said, "It said, come with me, watchman." The being then took him aboard for a tour of the spacecraft, which was at least two levels and filled with lights, switches, cables, and other instruments. At times, Shermer recalled that the being appeared to communicate with him telepathically, with words Shermer didn't understand. He said that the being explained that the spacecraft had come to Ashland to harvest electricity. At one point, another being aboard the craft pushed a few buttons, and an antenna on the vessel began absorbing electricity from some nearby power lines. Shermer appears to have said the same under hypnosis to the Condon Committee. He says in the report, Herb went on to say that what electricity was used was returned. In his account to the Condon Committee, Shermer said before departing that the alien beings told him they would be in touch with him within the year. The committee investigated Shermer's account and later included its findings on the case in its published report. Researchers found no material traces of the spacecraft, discounting a small scrap of metal that Washlin found at the site the next morning. The intersection also tested negative for any traces of radioactivity. Though a psychology examination of Shermer concluded the patrolman sincerely believed in the events he described, the investigators finally declared they had no confidence that the trooper's reported UFO experience was at all physically real. The Condon Committee would later apply the same logic to UFO sightings in general, concluding in 1968 that nothing has come from the study of UFOs in the past 21 years that has added to scientific knowledge. Now, some people in Ashland continued to harass Shermer. At one point, a group strung up a life-sized dummy in the local cemetery. They painted Shermer's name on it, shot holes through it, and called in local emergency crews to respond to the scene. Shermer eventually left Ashland, living for a time in the Pacific Northwest. He continued to make headlines in Omaha throughout the 70s. When the World Herald noted his appearance in TV specials and books about UFOs, he became even more popular. Mr. Shermer died in 2017. Wow. I've never heard of this story before, but I will tell you some things that stand out to me. The fact that the UFO was somehow drawing on electricity from power lines, that is something I have heard numerous times. Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but there was another story or sighting by a power plant, and the guy had seen a UFO hovering there, and it was like drawing electricity out of the power plant. Very odd, but something I've heard about before. Also, when he talks about going aboard the spacecraft, he talks about it being two levels. I find that interesting because when Bob Lazar was on Joe Rogan's show and also in the documentary, he talks about it having two levels. Although one thing I would say is he said that he didn't see any wires, where this guy reported cables, buttons, and switches and things like that. So that's different than Lazar's story. But anyways, very interesting nonetheless. Let's move on. The next one is Manuel Amparano. Now, from the 1970s, we have the frightening encounter relayed by an officer Manuel Amparano of Kerman, California. It was a little after 3:30 a.m. on May 13th, 1978, when Amparano was on a routine patrol and noticed a circular-type thing similar to a round fireball or setting sun, about 100 to 150 feet off the ground. Thinking that this was maybe a fire, he got closer to investigate, and what he took to be a tree on fire suddenly lifted off the ground. The amazed officer quickly trained his searchlight on the object and was met with a bright blue flash, after which whatever it was sped off. That flash soon turned out to have been perhaps some sort of weapon, as Officer Amaparano claims he was left with burns on his face and chest, of which he would say, "It was like a bad sunburn. You know, when you accidentally fall asleep at the pool. There were white blisters on the parts of my body facing that light. I also had trouble with sunlight. It was like right after you have your eyes checked and they're a bit sensitive to light. That lasted about a week." When the doctors examined him, they came to the conclusion that these particular burns seemed to have been caused by microwaves, although no one could figure out how it happened. An investigation of the area, purported encounter, would turn up a circle of dead vegetation, where it is claimed nothing would grow for years after, although now it is apparently an almond orchard. So what happened? Who knows? What did he see? How did it burn him? I know it's a short one, but interesting nonetheless. Moving on, Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson. Just after midnight, on August 27th, 1979, on an empty two-lane blacktop in northwest Minnesota, Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson saw an unusual bright light. Driving at 65 miles an hour to reach it, the light suddenly zoomed ahead and it started approaching head-on to Johnson's patrol car. As he later described it, what was there all of a sudden was here. He was blinded. He heard the sound of breaking glass, and he passed out. When Johnson awoke, nearly 40 minutes later, the car was stopped sideways, halfway off the road, having somehow driven itself almost 1,000 feet. Inexplicably, the car's electric clock and Johnson's hand-wound wristwatch, which he always kept synced and on time, were both 14 minutes slow. Johnson, it was later found, had burned retinas from exposure to extremely bright light. He also had no idea how the car had stopped, although it left 100 feet of skid marks. A metal expert from Honeywell Labs examined the car's two weirdly bent antennas and came away puzzled. The bending, he said, seemed to have been caused by high-velocity blasts of air. Perplexed expert from Ford Motor Company wrote that the car's multiple windshield cracks were caused by unknown inward and outward forces acting almost simultaneously. All of the damage to the car, from front to back, was within a straight line, only 1 foot wide. County officials wanted to fix the car and put it back on patrol. Instead, it was left untouched and displayed at the Marshall County Fair. The car proved to be so popular that Sheriff Dennis Breck donated it to the Settlers Square Historical Museum in Warren, and it's been there ever since. The copper-colored 1977 Ford LTD is an odd counterpoint to the typical county museum relics around it, an old buggy, plow, a washing machine, etc. But according to Kent Broughton, president of the Historical Society, it's definitely the number one attraction at the museum. Kent, who remembers the incident when it happened, said that the car's popularity has never sagged. "People come from all over," he said. "Some people lay on the floor and look underneath it. One time I saw a guy with a black light flashlight going over the car." Kent said that over the years, he's heard enough stories from locals to convince him that what happened to Johnson wasn't a hoax. But the idea that the car could harbor any undiscovered secrets at this point seems very unlikely. Although the car isn't roped off, the museum prefers that its visitors look but don't touch. "There are some people to this day who wonder why they don't fix it," Kent said of the car. "Other people, when they come, all they want is to see the car." One person, apparently, who would rather not see it is former Deputy Johnson. Kent said that Johnson has never visited the car, no longer even lives in the area, and prefers to keep a low profile. "Sometimes he'll talk about what happened," Kent said, "but for the most part, he won't." Wow. What an amazing sighting and stories. Once again, we talk about it all the time on the show. For whatever reason, when it comes to people that are trained observers, right? Like the one guy was talking about, he's trained how to write notes down in a log. This is what they do. This is what they teach you in the police academy, you know, how to be a trained observer, because whenever you're investigating something, I mean, this could be used in court. So you got to be as accurate as possible. These people are seeing things. I mean, there's physical. What happened to the car in the last story? I mean, it was hit with some kind of light, destroyed the windshield, burned the guy's retinas, drug the car 100 feet or 1,000 feet down the road. I mean, it's still on display to this day. I'd like to go there and check that out. You know, we talk about on the show also all the time. If someone says they see something like a UFO or a dog man or an alien or a ghost, whatever, to me, it doesn't even matter if it's real or not. The effect is the same. It affects those people for the rest of their lives. So whether physically real or imagined, the effect is the same. I hope you like those stories. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Word.
Hope you like those stories. I mean, that's just a few. There's a ton more out there. But I assembled some of my favorite ones by these police officers. Very cool stories. I like them. I've always liked the stories of UFOs. I like the stories of sightings of all types of strange stuff. So I hope you enjoyed it too. Cam?
Yeah.
What's been going on in your world, man?
Man, oh man, just living it up. I like the weather's getting better. I'm glad we're kind of getting back to normalcy.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a fan of all that stuff going together. One of our good buddies and jiu-jitsu instructor and all that stuff, Mr. Monty Edwards, is retiring at the end of this week. So I won't get to see him every day at work. So it's one of those deals like, hey, man. So we were talking earlier today about all that stuff, but he gets to retire coming up here and then going to run his gym. So that's it. 20 years working here. And then now he's got his gym going and all that. So he'll bounce over to that. So to say I'm jealous is an understatement. I'm like, doggone it. I wish I could retire right now.
Yeah, no kidding, right? That's awesome. We're getting ready to celebrate the twins' 13th birthday coming up.
I can't believe that.
Their actual birthday's on May 18th, but we're going to be having a birthday party at our house. Just a couple of their friends coming over. They're going to be swimming and I'm sure playing video games.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Ping pong or whatever. So you know how it is when you have a bunch of kids come over to stay the night at your kid's place. It's it's wild, right? You can't do anything. You're out of your normal routine. Like, I can't sit on my computer or on the television and watch TV and relaxing. You know, I can't watch live PD or whatever because there'll be kids.
You can't drink beer and scroll through all your favorite porn sites. We know what's going on.
Right, you can't do that either because you don't know what these kids are going to go back and tell their parents, you know? You got to kind of be on guard in case something happens on your watch.
Yeah.
It's just... I hate to say it. I'm not looking forward to that part of it, but I'm going to be grilling everything, hamburgers and stuff like that. So it's going to be fun.
I don't like the responsibility.
Yeah, my kids, I can beat my own kids. I'm just kidding. It's jokes, folks. It's just jokes.
I don't know if you can beat those boys now. No, how tall are they now?
5'9". And they're 12, just about to be 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to be big.
Yeah, it's going to be. There's going to be some trouble there.
Yeah, we don't know. None of us know what the biological father looked like. I'm referring to is the twins are adopted, in case you're new to the show.
Yeah.
So he must have evidently.
We knew he was tall, but that's about all. We don't know how tall for sure.
Yeah, evidently he must have been a big fella because these boys, they've always been big.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What's still so funny is we still have people now that can't tell them apart.
I know.
That struggle. And I'm like, dude, they haven't looked the same to me since they were about 3 months old.
Yeah.
After that, I'm like, they don't look anything alike.
Not to me. But yeah, no, you're 100% right.
And they don't act anything alike.
They got different haircuts.
Yeah.
Caleb's got long hair flowing like
this. How long is he going to let it go? Pretty long. I bet he lets it go for a while.
Yeah. He said he likes it. I'm fine with it. I'm like, you just got to get, you know, make sure you comb it.
Yeah. No, he don't.
You'll look homeless.
He ain't doing that. When I was over that last time, it wasn't sticking up. It was just down and shaggy. And you know what he reminds me of? And we've made jokes about this on the show. Like a captain, like a ship captain or a fishing guide or whatnot. That's the kind that he reminds me of. Like, I could see him on the beach, nothing but shorts and flip-flops, long hair. It would be fitting for him.
Yeah, he's getting geared up because we're going to Galveston in July. So he's already asking about the fishing.
He can't wait.
I ruined him because now every time he goes fishing around here, it's just not as fun as when you go out in the ocean.
He's right.
I know he's right. I'm like, look, I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah, I agree. He's right. Sadly. So, yeah.
Looking forward to that.
We've got some stuff coming up, folks. A few more interviews that we've got. Some really interesting stuff coming up, hopefully, that y'all will really enjoy. Yeah. Some new books coming out. So we're talking to some people with their new books coming out.
Yeah.
And when all this gets lifted, like I said, you know, we had Nick on just recently. He is going to come in and be in studio with us while we do some YouTubing. So we'll probably get him on a video. We may even get him to live stream with us, which would be a lot of fun.
That'd be cool.
So, yeah, to get Nick to live stream with us would be a good time. Yeah,
very cool. Well, so, if you have any sightings or stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow us on all forms of social media. You can call the show 817-945-3828. Let's not forget about our sponsor, Lightstream. Lightstream can help you lower your interest rates and save money with a credit card consolidation loan or other types of loans. But and you can get an additional discount. But the only way to get that is to go to lightstream.com/expanded. For that discount, that's lightstream.com/expanded. That's about all the time we have for this show, folks. For you elite members, we'll be talking to you later this week. For everybody else, we'll see you next time. Be safe. Wash your hands. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.